Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here once again on KTAH 101.9's Climate Talk program, the place where we talk about everything climate, always respectfully. And you know, the reason I say that is because we've got to do a better job of listening to each other if we're going to take on the challenge, the multiple challenges that climate change present to us. And just to be clear, these are not small challenges. These are major existential challenges to the future of us as a species. Yeah, sure, I think we're going to survive one way or the other. The question is, which way is it that we're going to survive? The thoughtful, careful, planned way, or just dealing with the stuff as it shows up and the damage and the suffering that that kind of waiting is going to create? And you know, when we talk about this, and I'm guilty of this as the next person, I tend to kind of worry about the bad stuff in the future. But the reality is, if we have a clean economy, by that I mean a clean energy economy, there's lots of really cool stuff out there waiting for us, a cleaner, happier world where we can enjoy the outdoors, we can enjoy nature, we can have conveniences, we can have cool stuff, and we can do it all without despoiling the environment. I would love to hear from you, especially if you disagree with something I say on the program or ideas for future programs. I would love that. You can contact me at John, J-O-H-N, at cclTacoma.org. The CCL is for Citizens Climate Lobby. I'm an activist with Citizens Climate Lobby. At the end of the program today, I'll make reference to show notes. We'll have show notes posted on the internet so you can check out some of the stuff that I refer to and confirm or deny it for yourself. Okay, my topic today, nuclear power. It's a pretty controversial subject in most fields, and so let's play with that and let's develop some kind of thoughts about whether nuclear power should be a part of our clean energy future or not. So the concerns about nuclear power are, in no particular order, the waste that's created by the nuclear energy to electricity process, safety. We know about Chernobyl and Fukushima, Three Mile Island way back there in the past, and so we're worried about safety. What about terrorism and nuclear proliferation? You know, what if terrorists get a hold of a nuclear energy of some form or the other via the process of claiming to be building nuclear power, and then they use it to attack the United States? And then there's the issue of cost. How much does it cost for nuclear energy versus other forms of energy? I'd like to approach this subject from two different perspectives. One of them is, of course, just kind of looking at what the science and data says about nuclear energy. The other one, and actually I think the more important one, is how do we make up our minds about nuclear energy? How do we think about nuclear energy, and why do we think about it in that way? So let's do a little two-step mind experiment. Follow along with me here and just do the experiment on your own. Nobody's ever going to know what you came up with for an answer, so it's all good. So here's the experiment. First off, let's just ask ourselves politically, are we left of center, independent, or right of center? So the second part of the experiment is, do you favor building more nuclear power plants? You're not sure, or you're opposed to building nuclear power plants. So one of the things we know about attitudes towards climate change is that ideology is the best predictor of what one's perspective is on climate change. And I suspect the same thing is true regarding nuclear energy. So if you are self-described as left of center, then chances are you oppose adding nuclear energy to our mix. If you are right of center, you favor it. And if you're an independent or a centrist, maybe you're not quite sure. So here's my major point about that little experiment, and that is we really want to be making up our minds about energy, nuclear energy, climate change, all those things. We want to be making them our minds up based on science and data, listening to people who know what they're talking about, people that we can trust, rather than just relying on our own ideological perspective to make up our minds. I've quoted Carol Tavris, a social psychologist in the past about this, and it's basically about confirmation bias. We like to say seeing is believing, but Dr. Tavris says, no, it's the other way around. Believing is seeing, and our attitudes towards climate change, and in particular nuclear energy, probably fall into this category. If we're opposed to nuclear energy as a source, then we probably look for data to support that point of view. And the opposite is true, of course. So going to make some effort to escape that little human trap today. There's another little benefit to this process too, and that is my belief is that progressives, especially around things like the COVID and climate change, like to think of themselves as being science-based, data-based, and opponents who are, to a large extent, conservatives politically as denying science and data. So since progressives tend to oppose the use of nuclear energy, this is a great opportunity for you, if you're a progressive, to learn what it's like to hold on to some point of view based on your ideology rather than data. And just in saying that, I can suspect that I'm irritating people already, because we all like to think that our thinking is clear and rational and data-based, and that people that disagree with us are just the opposite of that. Ain't necessarily so. I'm going to do a little self-disclosure here. For many years, I was anti-nuke myself and my perspective, and looking back, I realized that I did that based on more on ideological things and fitting in with my political peers rather than taking a real hard look at what the data and the science were. There's a quote often attributed to John Maynard Keynes, "When the facts change, I change my mind." So I am happy to say that to some extent, my mind has changed over time as I've taken a closer look at nuclear. And I'm urging you to take a close look also. I'm not calling on you to come to one conclusion or the other. I'm just asking you to take a close look, and I'll revisit that later on. Another little caveat I want to throw out as we take a look here is the acknowledgement that we live in an imperfect world. There are things wrong with nuclear energy. There is no doubt about that. There are things that are wrong with coal, oil, natural gas. We know that, and there's no doubt about it. The reality is there's no energy source that is perfect and pure. There are just some that are better, some less damaging than others. So to point out a flaw in an energy system really is not adequate. We have to put those flaws within the context of how they fit in with all the other possible energy sources. We are not in a simple situation of choosing between good and bad. We're in a situation of choosing energy sources that have the least environmental impact. So today, in terms of talking about energy sources, we're talking about energy sources for electricity production alone. We're not talking about other costs for energy, such as industry or transportation. So let's start off by talking about the safety issue. It turns out, when we look at the experience with nuclear power all over the world, nuclear power is incredibly safe compared to other sources of energy. Seems like there's a human tendency where we become accustomed to certain kinds of risks and just shrug them off. So I'm going to give you some numbers here. I'll also include a reference to this in the program notes. And the numbers are related to deaths from air pollution and accidents per terawatt hour of energy production. Don't worry about what that terawatt hours actually means, is the numbers are relative. So in those terms, we can look at coal with a death rate of 24 plus, gas, natural gas I'm talking about, of 2.8. So natural gas significantly safer than coal. Oil at 18, so somewhere in the middle. When we get into the renewables, the deaths from pollution and accidents plummet to tiny amounts compared to coal, oil, and gas, which we kind of knew. So looking at a whole different scale, and these are tiny, nuclear power is one of the very safest forms of energy in terms of pollution and accidents. And that's safer than hydro, solar, biomass or wind. And my source here, double source, one is from NASA's climate page. I have a reference to that in the program notes. And a great organization called Our World in Data provides those numbers. So in terms of pollution and accidents, nuclear is exceedingly safe. And this is based on our actual experience over many years. And I should say also that we're talking about worldwide use of nuclear power, not just in the United States. So let's just talk about waste for a second. Of course, nuclear waste is a concern. But referring back to my earlier comment about us being in a place of choosing things that are less bad, not things that are perfect, versus things that are bad, nuclear waste is a manageable problem. One of the demonstrations of nuclear waste in the United States that I've seen is that we could take all of the nuclear waste that's ever been developed in the United States and we could put it on a football field in containers 50 feet high. That's the entire body of the waste in the United States since we started creating nuclear power. And further, I would like to make the point that this is conventional nuclear power the way we've been doing it for these last few decades. There are some possibilities out there that really turn the tables on this whole nuclear waste thing, and I'm going to get to that here in a minute. So let's talk about security a bit. So I'm talking about terrorism, of course. Well, it would be a disaster of incredible proportion if terrorists were able to set off a nuclear device in a populated area anywhere in the world, and we can't let that happen. The reality is that right now there's a lot of nuclear material that could be used for making a weapon around the world, in Europe, in Russia, in China, in the United States. And the issue is, are we taking good care of that or not? And according to the Union of Concerned Scientists, we are not doing a good job in terms of worldwide security to all that nuclear material that could be used for a weapon in the hands of terrorists. But that's really separate from having nuclear power plants. Because of the large amount of nuclear material that's around in the world, adding nuclear power plants really is not a factor in terms of nuclear materials being available to terrorists. I would say the same thing is true regarding nuclear proliferation. Take a quick look. South Korea has been able to develop a nuclear energy system in their country, and they're a non-nuclear power. To the north of them, a country that's been denied nuclear energy, is a nuclear power. So the solution to nuclear security, I'm saying, is not so much in just avoiding nuclear energy. It's more about how we manage security issues in general. So let's shift gears here a bit. At the head of the program, I said something about, well, there are bright things in the future. It's not all just worrisome and prospective disasters. So one of those is completely new thinking regarding nuclear energy. And those are things that forget about the scales that we've been using since the 70s and essentially the technology that we've been using since the 70s and so on. These are small modular reactors that are far, far safer, that aren't suffering the possibility of meltdowns and things like that. So they're incredibly safe. One in particular I'm going to take a close look at is funded and directed by our good friend Bill Gates up there in good old Bellevue. And I should say Bill and Melinda Gates, because Bill's wife, Melinda, is very deeply involved in many of the activities that their foundation is involved with, and that includes developing a new form of nuclear energy. The Gates Foundation is involved with a company they've created called TerraPower. And TerraPower has one task and one task alone, and that is developing this new kind of nuclear energy production. They are working on a kind of reactor that's referred to as a traveling wave reactor. I'm not a nuclear scientist, don't pretend to be, don't understand the process, but I can listen to people that I trust. And people that I've trust describe this process and this reactor as one that actually the waste that we've developed over the last decades can be used for the fuel. There is no need to cool the reactor because of the process, so the idea of a meltdown just is not a possibility. The Gates Foundation has invested significant sums in the traveling wave reactor experimentation stage. They actually had an agreement with China to develop one of these plants in China, but unfortunately, politics has stuck its foot in the door in terms of restricting technology transfers to China and other trade-related squabbles, and so that process of building that plant has come to a halt. TerraPower is still experimenting. They're experimenting with simulator modulations, so they aren't at a full stop, but close to it. So this brings up another one of the worries, the problems with nuclear power, and that is how difficult it is to get a new plant online, even these experimental plants that show a great deal of promise. Right now, the lead time in the United States, just in the planning stage, for a new nuclear facility is somewhere around 10 to 20 years. And then once that process is done, it's another 10 to 20 years before the plant actually comes online. And the reality is we're in kind of an emergency situation in terms of bringing clean energy online. There's a Chinese, I believe it is, expression that says, when's the best time to plant a tree? The answer is 20 years ago. So when would be the best time to start building nuclear if we're going to go that way? Well, 20 years ago. But once again, I'm just throwing out that we live in an imperfect world. And yes, we're behind times in addressing climate change. That's real clear, real obvious. The possibility of nuclear power and us being behind the curve on that is just another example of the same thing. So as always, I'm putting out to you, to us, the necessity to dig into subjects and become knowledgeable about them, to not make up our minds simply based on what our predispositions ideologically or politically are. There's a guy named Mark Jacobs. He's a professor down at Stanford. He's the director of their atmosphere and energy program and a professor of civil and environmental engineering there. By the way, I like the fact that he's an engineer, not just, let's say, a theoretical scientist, because engineers make stuff in the real world. They solve problems in the real worlds. And Mark Jacobson, by the way, was a professor in an energy innovation course I took at Stanford. He's a great guy. He's a smart guy, and he's done an incredible amount of work. And you can find some of his speaking engagements on YouTube if you care to take a look there. So in the program notes, I'm going to give a reference to Professor Jacobson, and the quick overview is that he is convinced that we can power the world with wind, water, and solar, and we don't need nuclear energy. So a very solid source to look at if you want to see that side of the discussion. And as I said, I'll put a reference in the program notes. We don't want to look at just one side from people who know what they're talking about, however, so I want to refer also to a guy named Michael Schellenberger. He's an environmentalist, he's a writer, and he's a nuclear spokesperson, and he gives the positive side of moving ahead with nuclear energy. Short version on both of these, let's do our homework. We're in an era where the decisions we make as a people about energy are critically important, and it's up to us to invest the energy in making sure that when we decide, however we decide, that that decision is based on science and data, not on ideological bias or perspective. So that's kind of an introductory overview of nuclear energy and should that be a part of our energy package or not. And so I'm asking myself, where do I stand on this? And I got to say, at this point, I'm on the fence. And that's different from where I was even just a few months ago, where I was pretty adamant, no, we don't need nuclear. We don't want nuclear in our energy mix going forward. The reason for that change came from taking a close look at the data, looking at the challenges that confront us, and revising my thinking from there. So I want to just do a little plug here for an organization called League of Conservation Voters. I'll put a link in our program notes to that organization too. We do have an election coming up. We all know that. And it's a critically important election. And it's an opportunity that comes along periodically for us to express our well-founded points of view and to elect people that are going to make science and data-based decisions, not ideological decisions. And so this League of Conservation Voters is a great medium to actually be active in encouraging people to get out to vote. The more people we have vote, the more sound I believe our policies are going to be. So take a look at that. You can find the program notes at ccltacoma.org. And just look for the radio program icon to click on there, and you'll see the notes from this program and previous programs, a great shortcut for you in doing your own research. Once again, I'd love to hear from you, John, J-O-H-N, at ccltacoma.org. And that's it for today. So once again, reminding you, as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care.